Chapter 5. It was daylight's night. He was the center and the head of the revel, unquenchably joyous, a contagion of fun. He multiplied himself, and in so doing multiplied the excitement. No prank he suggested was too wild for his followers, and all followed save those that developed into singing imbeciles and fell warbling by the wayside. Yet never did trouble intrude. It was known on the Yukon that when burning daylight made a night of it, wrath and evil were forbidden. On his nights men dared not quarrel. In the younger days such things had happened, and then men had known what real wrath was, and been manhandled as only burning daylight could manhandle. On his nights men must laugh, and be happy or go home. Daylight was inexhaustible. In between dances he paid over to Kearns the 20,000 in dust, and transferred to him his Moosehide claim. Likewise he arranged the taking over of Billy Rollins' mail contract, and made his preparations for the start. He dispatched a messenger to rout out Kama, his dog driver, a Tanana Indian, far wandered from his tribal home in the service of the invading whites. Kama entered the Tivoli, tall, lean, muscular, and fur-clad, the pick of his barbaric race and barbaric still, unshaken and unabashed by the revelers that rioted about him, while daylight gave his orders. Said Kama, tabling his instructions on his fingers. Edum letters from Rollins. Load em on sled. Grub for Selkirk. You think plenty dog grub stop Selkirk? Plenty dog grub, Kama. Bring sled this place 9 o'clock. Bring snowshoes. No bring tent. Meb bring fly? Little fly? No fly, daylight answered decisively. Much cold. We travel light, savvy? We carry plenty letters out, plenty letters back. You are strong man. Plenty cold, plenty travel, all right. Sure all right, Kama muttered, with resignation. Much cold, no carry damn. Ready 9 o'clock. He turned on his moccasined heel and walked out, imperturbable, sphinx-like, neither giving nor receiving greetings nor looking to right or left. The virgin led Daylight away into a corner. Look here, Daylight, she said, in a low voice, you're busted. I earn a kite. I've 8,000 in max safe, she began. But Daylight interrupted. The apron string loomed near, and he shied like an unbroken colt. It don't matter, he said. Busted I came into the world, busted I go out, and I've been busted most of the time since I arrived. Come on, let's waltz. But listen, she urged. Why money's doing nothing. I could lend it to you a grub stake, she added hurriedly, at sight of the alarm in his face. Nobody grub stakes me, was the answer. Stake myself, and when I make a killing it's sure all mine. No thank you, old girl. Much obliged. I'll get my stake by running the mail out and in. Daylight, she murmured, in tender protest. But with a sudden well-assumed ebullition of spirits he drew her toward the dancing floor, and as they swung around and around in the waltz she pondered on the iron heart of the man who held her in his arms, and resisted all her wiles. At 6 the next morning, scorching with whiskey, yet ever himself, he stood at the bar putting every man's hand down. The way of it was that two men faced each other across a corner, their right elbows resting on the bar, their right hands gripped together, while each strove to press the other's hand down. Man after man came against him, but no man put his hand down, even Olive Henderson and French Louis failing despite their hugeness. When they contended it was a trick, a trained muscular knack, he challenged them to another test. Look here, you all, he cried. I'm going to do two things. First, weigh my sack. And second, bet it that after you all have lifted clean from the floor all the sacks of flour you all are able, I'll put on two more sacks, and lift the whole caboodle clean. By gar! I'll take that. French Louis rumbled above the cheers. Hold on! Olive Henderson cried. Man just as good as you, Louis. I ump half that bet. put on the scales. Daylight's sack was found to balance an even $400, and Louis and Olive divided the bet between them. 50-pound sacks of flour were brought in from McDonald's catch. Other men tested their strength first. They straddled on two chairs, the flour sacks beneath them on the floor, and held together by rope lashings. Many of the men were able, in this manner, to lift 400 or 500 pounds, while some succeeded with as high as 600. Then the two giants took a hand, tying at 700. French Louis then added another sack, and swung 750 clear. Olive duplicated the performance, whereupon both failed to clear 800. Again and again they strove, their foreheads beaded with sweat, their frames crackling with the effort. Both were able to shift the weight, and to bump it, but clear the floor with it they could not. By gar! Daylight, this time you make one big mistake, French Louis said, straightening up and stepping down from the chairs. Only one damn iron man can do that. 100 pound more, my friend, not 10 pound more. The sacks were unlashed, but when two sacks were added, Kearns interfered. Lie one sack more. Two. Someone cried. Woe was the bet. They didn't lift that last sack, Kearns protested. They only lifted 750. But Daylight grandly brushed aside the confusion. What's the good of you all bothering around that way? What's one more sack? If I can't lift three more, I sure can't lift two. Put 'em in. He stood upon the chairs, squatted, and bent his shoulders down till his hands closed on the rope. He shifted his feet slightly, tautened his muscles with a tentative pull, then relaxed again, questing for a perfect adjustment of all the levers of his body. French Louis, looking on skeptically, cried out, "Pull like hell, Daylight! Pull like hell!" Daylight's muscles tautened a second time, and this time in earnest, until steadily all the energy of his splendid body was applied, and quite imperceptibly, without jerk or strain, the bulky 900 pounds rose from the door and swung back and forth, pendulum-like, between his legs. Olive Henderson sighed a vast audible sigh. The Virgin, who had tensed unconsciously till her muscles hurt her, relaxed, while French Louis murmured reverently, "Monsieur Daylight, salut. I am one big baby. You are one big man." Daylight dropped his burden, leaped to the floor, and headed for the bar. "Weigh in," he cried, tossing his sack to the weigher, who transferred to it $400 from the sacks of the two losers. "Surge up, everybody." Daylight went on. "Aim your snake juice. The winner pays. This is my night," he was shouting 10 minutes later. "I'm the lone he-wolf, and I've seen 30 winters. This is my birthday, my one day in the year, and I can put any man on his back. Come on, you all. I'm going to put you all in the snow. Come on, you chichaquos, one, and sourdoughs, two, and get your baptism. One, tenderfeet. Two, old-timers." The rout streamed out of doors, all save the barkeepers and the singing Bacchuses. Some fleeting thought of saving his own dignity entered McDonald's head, for he approached Daylight with outstretched hand. "What? You first?" Daylight laughed, clasping the other's hand, as if in greeting. "No, no," the other hurriedly disclaimed. "Us congratulations on your birthday. Of course you can put me in the snow. What chance have I against a man that lifts 900 pounds? McDonald weighed 180 pounds, and Daylight had him gripped solely by his hand. Yet, by a sheer abrupt jerk, he took the saloon keeper off his feet and flung him face downward in the snow. In quick succession, seizing the men nearest him, he threw half a dozen more. Resistance was useless. They flew helter-skelter out of his grips, landing in all manner of attitudes, grotesquely and harmlessly, in the soft snow. It soon became difficult, in the dim starlight, to distinguish between those thrown and those waiting their turn, and he began feeling their backs and shoulders, determining their status, by whether or not he found them powdered with snow. "Baptized yet?" became a stereotyped question as he reached out his terrible hands. Several score lay down in the snow in a long row, while many others knelt in mock humility, scooping snow upon their heads and claiming the rite accomplished. But a group of five stood upright, backwoodsmen and frontiersmen, they, eager to contest any man's birthday. Graduates of the hardest of manhandling schools, veterans of multitudes of rough and tumble battles, men of blood and sweat and endurance, they nevertheless lacked one thing that daylight possessed in high degree, namely, an almost perfect brain and muscular coordination. It was simple, in its way, and no virtue of his. He had been born with this endowment. His nerves carried messages more quickly than theirs. His mental processes, culminating in acts of will, were quicker than theirs. His muscles themselves, by some immediacy of chemistry, obeyed the messages of his will quicker than theirs. He was so made. His muscles were high-power explosives. The levers of his body snapped into play like the jaws of steel traps. And in addition to all this, his was that super strength that is the dower of but one human in millions, a strength depending, not on size but on degree, a supreme organic excellence residing in the stuff of the muscles themselves. Thus, so swiftly could he apply a stress, that, before an opponent could become aware and resist, the aim of the stress had been accomplished. In turn, so swiftly did he become aware of a stress applied to him, that he saved himself by resistance, or by delivering a lightning counter-stress. It ain't no use you all standing there, Daylight addressed the waiting group. You all might as well get right down and take your baptizing. You all might down me any other day in the year, but on my birthday I want you all to know I'm the best man. Is that Pat Hanrahan's mug looking hungry and willing? Come on, Pat. Pat Hanrahan, ex-bare knuckle prize fighter and roughhouse expert, stepped forth. The two men came against each other in grips, and almost before he had exerted himself the Irishman found himself in the merciless vise of a half-Nelson that buried him head and shoulders in the snow. Joe Hines, ex-lumberjack, came down with an impact equal to a fall from a two-story building, his overthrow accomplished by a cross buttock, delivered, he claimed, before he was ready. There was nothing exhausting in all this to Daylight. He did not heave and strain through long minutes. No time, practically, was occupied. His body exploded abruptly and terrifically in one instant, and on the next instant was relaxed. Thus, Doc Watson, the gray-bearded, iron-bodied man without a past, a fighting terror himself, was overthrown in the fraction of a second preceding his own onslaught. As he was in the act of gathering himself for a spring, Daylight was upon him, and with such fearful suddenness, as to crush him backward and down. Olive Henderson, receiving his cue from this, attempted to take Daylight unaware, rushing upon him from one side as he stooped with extended hand to help Doc Watson up. Daylight dropped on his hands and knees, receiving in his side Olive's knees. Olive's momentum carried him clear over the obstruction in a long, flying fall. Before he could rise, Daylight had whirled him over on his back, and was rubbing his face and ears with snow, and shoving handfuls down his neck. Why ban just as good a man as you ban, Daylight, Olive spluttered, as he pulled himself to his feet. But by Jupiter, I ban never see a grip like that. French Louis was the last of the five, and he had seen enough to make him cautious. He circled and baffled for a full minute, before coming to grips, and for another full minute they strained, and reeled without either winning the advantage. And then, just as the contest was becoming interesting, Daylight effected one of his lightning shifts, changing all stresses and leverages, and at the same time delivering one of his muscular explosions. French Louis resisted till his huge frame crackled, and then, slowly, was forced over and under and downward. The winner pays, Daylight cried, as he sprang to his feet and led the way back into the Tivoli. Urge along you all, this way to the snake room. They lined up against the long bar, in places two or three deep, stamping the frost from their moccasined feet, for outside the temperature was 60 below. Bettles, himself one of the gamest of the old-timers in deeds, and daring ceased from his drunken lay of the Asafra's root, and titubated over to congratulate Daylight. But in the midst of it, he felt impelled to make a speech, and raised his voice oratorically. I tell you fellers, I'm plumb proud to call Daylight my friend. We've hit the trail together afore now, and he's 18 carat from his moccasins up. Damn his mangy old hide, anyway. He was a shaver when he first hit this country. When you fellers was his age, you want dry behind the ears yet. He never was no kid. He was born a full-grown man. And I tell you, a man had to be a man in them days. This want no effete civilization like it's come to be now. Bettles paused long enough to put his arm in a proper bear hug around Daylight's neck. When you and me mushed into the Yukon in the good ole days, it didn't rain soup and they want no free lunch joints. Our campfires was lit, where we killed our game, and most of the time we lived on salmon tracks, and rabbit bellies, ain't I right? But at the roar of laughter that greeted his inversion, Bettles released the bear hug and turned fiercely on them. Ah, you Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.